So they asked me, they said, hey, do you want to run a podcast? And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, but only if I could talk to you.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking today to Jonathan. Jonathan Brown from, you can tell them who you are.
Sure. I'm Jonathan Brown, Chief Growth Officer at Trendhunter.
And Jonathan, I'm Daniel Burkle, and I'm taking over the podcast for a minute.
All right.
But I want to talk with you. So we're here in Chicago at this really cool event. It's a perfect size. People are interacting. And the whole day started off today. It's day one. It started off with a really interesting keynote. And if you saw it online, cool. But if you didn't, we'll talk about it as well. And Jonathan was the keynote speaker. In your own words, if you had like one sentence, what was it about?
I'm essentially using hip-hop as a lens to help people learn about themselves as innovators.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The audience wasn't a hip-hop audience, was it?
I wouldn't say so. But
no. How did they react to it?
Usually, they reacted the way that I anticipate, which is usually you have two groups. You have either some segment of the audience that identifies with the subject matter that feels like hip-hop is theirs, and then you have a portion of the audience that doesn't have any connection or feeling of connection to hip-hop. And so the first group are the ones that are nodding along and I'm really enthusiastic. Visually, I can see that. The second group are arguably more satisfying for me because the journey they go on to the aha is a lot more substantial. And by the end of it, when they realize that they do have a connection to hip hop, it's more satisfying for me.
It's interesting to me because watching the cadence, if I put that together, knowing the right pieces, the right characters, Grandmaster Flash and Nas and Eminem, you're trying to get demographics to buy in, right? Is that part of it?
I think there is a challenge in the sense that there's so many stories that you could tell that to curate the ones that hit the best and have the best arcs is a challenge. I could probably make 5 different versions of that same keynote with different versions of stories to hit each one. So yeah, there is purposeful inclusions there for different elements.
As an audience member, I was absolutely amazed at how people bought it. When it started off, they announced what the topic was. You came on, you gave a little spiel, who you were, what you do. But then I watched the audience members all kind of realize, wait a second, this isn't a hip-hop presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a insights innovation. Am I correct in saying that? Is it?
Yeah, that's the intention, right? I'm just bringing a perspective to a subject matter that people care about in this particular context, but purposefully doing it in a provocative way that should be memorable and at least make them read the title and say, I need to at least see what that session is about.
Do you find it easier or more difficult to speak about a topic like this in a style like this, knowing how much you have personal impact from the music, from the culture?
So do I find it easy to speak about it?
In
this context.
With this audience, yeah.
Well, what I'll say is this, is that it took me a little while in my speaking career to figure out that my perspective is my superpower and to lean into providing a divergent perspective. Early, like many of us, we try to a degree, assimilate to the corporate cultures or the norms and kind of the middle of everything that you think is the way that it's going to make it digestible. And over the years, as I've gotten more experience and kind of realized why I'm brought in any given situation, I've been able to have more confidence in leaning into what my perspective is.
In the presentation, you talked about various archetypes. And do you want to give a brief overview of what those were?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a framework, a hunter-farmer framework, where we think about innovators as embodying, you know, some of the hunter instincts and some of the farmer instincts, right? So farmer instinct, an example would be something like consistency or loyalty. And a hunter instinct would be something like willing to destroy or insatiable. And there's three on this side and three on this side. And the idea is that all of us embody these to some degree, but some of us are, you know, more to one side than the other. And there's a double-edged sword to all of them. So for me, my primary trait is that I'm willing to destroy, and this comes from our innovation assessment. And the flip side to that is that I'm also reckless, or I could be perceived as, or in times I might be reckless, and that I maybe don't include all the necessary stakeholders. Right? I'm action oriented. I'm willing to destroy the way that things have been. And, you know, there's a double edged sword to that. So kind of embodying your superpower, but also being conscious of what the double edged sword to that is, so that you can also curb that weakness, is really the essence of the framework and the point of why we built this innovation assessment. And then this keynote is essentially a flip on those archetypes and those characteristics to kind of demonstrate their validity in a different context.
Is there any of those archetypes you identify with directly?
So, well, my archetype is an ambitious visionary, which sounds kind of douchey when I say it, but on a card, it looks kind of cool.
Yeah, totally.
But I'm willing to destroy and I'm curious. Those are my two primary traits.
So if I recall watching it, there was like DJ, producer.
Right.
What does that map onto in terms of hip-hop?
Yeah, so Willing to Destroy would be the graffiti artist.
Yeah.
Right? That's pretty much on the nose, you know, kind of example. And then Curious is the producer.
Right.
Right? So the curiosity of the producer to find, you know, digging in the crates and finding the one sliver of an instrument that they're going to use, you know, in their new beat. And then, of course, the willingness to destroy of the graffiti artist who will, you know, tag the side of a subway car or, you know, take over the side of a storefront or something like that with their art.
So even though this is a podcast and I know we're on a camera, but it's audio, right? I can see your eyes looking at me. You get this stuff. You're in. Like, you, this is your topic, right?
Totally.
How did you make the jump from, I know you talked about this in the presentation, your background and your own personal love of the topic, of hip hop, of music, of culture. How did you make the jump from that to being a researcher?
Yeah. It's funny because we all have these breadcrumbs that we leave behind us, and when you look back, you can kind of figure out, oh, I see how that bridged me to this, to that. But in the moment, you don't always know why you're doing what you're doing. And my background is in journalism. So I gravitated towards journalism that was music journalism, that was about, you know, music and culture and art and fashion and this sort of thing. And when I got into sort of the research realm, my first project was interviewing leaders, like executives and innovation and insights to understand how they make innovation happen, because I thought that there's too much vague rhetoric around innovation, that it kind of gets almost like political speak after a while. It doesn't really mean anything. And I had already had, you know, a decade of interviewing rappers in at the back of concerts and, you know, producers and this and that. And so I kind of cut my teeth in difficult interview situations. And then when I started interviewing leaders in business, once I got to Trendhunter, then I thought, this is actually way easier, because they want to talk and they want to talk about what they're doing and that sort of thing. So it was, you know, I think a product of a lot of things that got me to this place. One is, journalism prepared me to be able to talk to people in new settings and feel comfortable and be able to recap back their stories, which, you know, but then I also had this entrepreneurial aspect of my character, which was that I was always starting a business down into high school. You know, I was selling jewelry. I, you know, was doing baseball tutoring. I always had some kind of business going. And then when I was running my radio show in university, I was putting money into marketing it, and there was no income source. So I started these t-shirts and hoodies so that I could sell merch for the radio show to fund the radio show. And so when I finally got to where I am now, I remember saying to a friend of mine, oh, I'm going to take on this, you know, I'm going to build the sales team at Trend Hunter. I've never been in sales. And he looked at me and said, what do you mean you've never been in sales? You've always been in sales. You've always been selling your dream, the vision, the radio show, the conversation, the hoodies.
How do you get that love? How do you keep that love alive when you're selling something that you don't automatically have like a heart for?
Oh, I mean, how I keep the love alive is that when I get to go into different worlds, I'm inspired by the deep dives that I get into those worlds. And I think that we grow up only knowing so many professions, and we as kids have our big bucket. I'm going to be a police officer. I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to whatever. You don't think about all of the middle minutiae of business that are out there. But the best part of my world is the worlds I get introduced to.
Totally. I feel that.
Exactly.
Do you mind if I put you on the spot and start asking you questions I'm curious about?
Sure.
Who's the greatest MC of all time?
Isn't that a question for the ages?
It's a question.
Okay, so I think that if you get technical about it, that's a different conversation than whose lyrics matter to you the most. And so I've circled this question with a million people because it really depends on what you're answering. I mean, technically, you could argue that, you know, Eminem, Rakim, these people are, Big Pun, these people meant more to the craft of, you know, internal rhyme schemes and bending language. And so as an MC, that's, I think, one element of a great MC is, technically speaking, are you able to bend the language and manipulate it to tell stories and make points in different ways, right? Then you also have somebody like Tupac, who for me meant a lot to me. I really it really resonated with me, the emotion that was in his music. He raps like the world is depending on his raps, and that intensity to me carries over in how I receive it. And that's different than kind of an Eminem rappity rap for the sake of showing me how amazing he is as a rapper, right? Now, Eminem also, for instance, has some of that element of emotion in his early work, especially. And then I think that, you know, you're playing with just what are your criteria for the greatest MC?
It's a loaded question.
Yeah.
I asked it. You gave me an answer much better than I thought I would ever hear. Like, I love the layers of dimensionality to that answer. Okay, so let me rephrase it then. Who, it could be any of the characters within that world, right? So it can be MC, producer. Who got you into this field? Not this field, into this genre.
Well, I started, so the origin story, my origin story is that I changed schools in the middle of grade school. I went to a new school. I walked onto the schoolyard for the first time. This kid named Billy approached me, good old Billy.
Good old boy.
And he said, hey, are you new here? And I said, yeah. Hey, I'm Billy. It's cool. He's like, well, those guys over there, and he points to these three, four guys, they listen to rock. Those guys, those are my friends. We listen to hip hop. What kind of music do you listen to? And I was like, I just know I don't like country because my mom listens to country.
And how old were you?
I'm 10.
Yeah, okay.
10, 11. I just know I don't like country because that's what my mom listens to. But otherwise, I'm kind of not yet formed in my musical identity at that time. She said, all right, well, want to come play basketball? So sure. So I'm going to play basketball. And then they slowly introduced me. And so this is the 96, 97, somewhere in there. So this is like Tupac has died. Biggie's died. So those are the two, like Biggie and Tupac became. Yeah. And then Eminem, early Eminem hits right after that. My Name Is and all of that. And that was like, for me at that age, shock rap was the funnest thing to listen to, all the stuff that you're not supposed to listen to and the things that are being said that you shouldn't be hearing and all that was you know, that adolescence kind of idea. But I think Tupac and Biggie were the first ones that I really got deep into. And admittedly, I just missed the wave. So they had just died when I caught that. So I went back and I remember when Tupac died, but I didn't really know his music at that time.
Cause you were nine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. You can see the wheels in my head turning. I'm trying to figure out. Okay. If you had to give a tick, mm-hmm. you mentioned a bunch of tips in your presentation, mm-hmm. In the keynote. If you had to give it, most of the people listening to this are in the research field, mm-hmm. the innovation field, et cetera. Mm-hmm. If you had to give it one tick, mm-hmm. on what someone can do to maximize their value, mm. in their craft, what would it be?
I would, my number one tip to everybody is to take stock of the transferable skills that you have and not anchor yourself in the identity of the job title that you have. Because you might be a researcher right now, but what does that allow you to be next would be my tip to them. Education, in my opinion, and even our employers to a large degree are not great at helping us find the dotted lines between what we can do or what we do now and what we can do in the future. You know, in school, if you go to university for something, then they tell you that what the options are relative to what you're studying to be. When I was in school for journalism, you know what they tell you? There's no jobs in journalism. And if you get one, you're going to get paid poorly. But they didn't tell me that all of these skills that I built up could help me on stages, could help me in sales conversations, could help me in relationship building. So that'd be my tip to everybody is take stock of the transferable skills that you have. You might just be applying them in a certain context now, but that doesn't mean that that's what you are.
This conference, this event happens to be in Chicago, right? A city with so much. Mm-hmm. When you think of Chicago, I know when I fly to a city, I always have a soundtrack in my head. What's the soundtrack of Chicago?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off is what I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think of like Don Cashin and Trailist and all that from that whole...
Weird Outside the Window.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what I think of.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to pull that into more of a hip-hop space. But...
Oh, well, yeah. Chicago. I mean, Chicago from a hip-hop point of view is a tumultuous scene. I mean, because it's so violent and it's so right up against the streets. So it's its own beast altogether. But yeah, I mean, Kanye West is from Chicago. I think Lupe Fiasco is from Chicago as well. He's incredible. I've listened to, if anybody out there hasn't heard The Cool, they should go listen to Lupe Fiasco, The Cool. It's an incredible concept of an album. And then you have like the newer wave of Lil Durk and Chief Keef and these folks from Chicago as well.
I put you on the spot and I apologize. I'm out with the questions I was going to ask you.
Sure.
Is there anything I'm not asking you think I should be asking you? Is there anything you want to get across? Anything?
No, I think that's it. I mean, those are the main points. Yeah.
It's been a fun time here, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah, absolutely.
You've got things started off on a really awesome note. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of this event plays out.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, thanks, Matt.
See you.
Cheers. Really? Selling
Right.
I mean, I use the word crackers always in my head. Like, I'm like, how am I going to sell the world crackers for research as a bad CPG product kind of mentality, right?
Yeah.